I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
You can work out a whole lot of shit in the aisles of Target.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I refuse to settle for being the future when I can be right now.
Listen along by searching The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello and welcome to the Three Red Lights podcast. This is episode number 149. That's counting the 50 some odd episodes that we've just skipped. I'm your host, Eric Redving. I'm here with Mark Ryan Sally.
Hey, how's it going?
We have Arthur Gies here.
Good morning.
And we also have Claude from halo.bungie.org calling in as a very special guest.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. And of course, since we have you here, we're going to dedicate this entire podcast to nothing but Halo. I think this might be the second or third time we've done this on the Three Red Lights podcast.
It's actually pretty good, all things considered.
Yeah.
There are other things on Xbox to talk about?
There's some other games every now and then.
All right.
So, yeah, we've got Halo's basically coming in full on. Their marketing is jumped through the roof now. Now Bungie's massive reveals every single week.
Halo Reach. Okay.
That's the one we're on now.
All right.
What was the last Halo game you played, Mark?
The last Halo game I played was that one on Mac. No.
Wow.
I played ODST.
You played ODST?
Yeah.
What'd you think of ODST? Were you a hater?
No, I actually really liked the single player. The multiplayer, you know, I'm sort of ambivalent toward like the newer multiplayer games. I really like the original Halo multiplayer, but I quite like the single player.
What about you, Arthur? What's your Halo history?
I also dug ODST a lot. I thought Firefight was great every time I played it at events, and when I tried to play it online, I was stymied by the absolutely awful netcode.
Yeah, no matchmaking. Kind of had to find the friends, which sucked.
Really awful lag for everyone but the host. I've been super into Halo basically since Xbox. Like, that was pretty much what sucked me back into gaming.
And, Claude, I don't think we have to ask what your history is with Halo. Actually, though, if you could give us a history of halo.bungie.org, that would be awesome.
A history. Let's see. Well, it started in late 1998, actually. Marathon.org was a big marathon central repository for sites and files and such. It went offline in December of that year, and a bunch of fans got together and said, man, we got to find a replacement. We got to make a replacement. And while we're at it, why not just include all the other Bungie games? Because by that time there was Myth, and there was Pathways into Darkness, and Oni was in production at the time. And so we started up Bungie.org in January of 1999, and we heard about this game Blam at E3 in that year. It was a code name for Halo, and we didn't know anything about it. We just knew it was another Bungie game, so we put up a page for it. Had no clue it was going to get to be this huge whatever it turned into. It just grew, you know? I mean, we just stuck with the site and posted news every day and eventually became a place for people to go to.
So do you guys talk about, or do you cover exclusively Halo now, or do you guys still have a thriving Oni community?
There is an Oni community. I'm not sure I would call it thriving. but it's amazing because people are building, people are building what could be Oni 2 at the moment. Hmm. You know, fans are. And there's a forum where they get together and pass files around and such. That game is sort of in limbo because the code's owned by I guess, Take-Two these days? I don't remember anymore. Right.
They were the original publishers, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, they got the game when Bungie sold to Microsoft. They got Myth and Oni, and then they didn't do anything with it. And nobody else is doing anything with it. So the fans are doing what they can, and there's, like I said, there is a community. But, yeah, thriving's not the right word.
So the
Myth page just posted a new post this week, as a matter of fact, celebrating the Myth World Cup. So, I don't know.
What's your role at the site? Do you deal with all these games? Are you specifically interested in Halo?
Halo is the only one that I actually post news for these days. I mean, I run all the servers, and if people need access, you know, there's still a marathon community. The open source version, Aleph 1, is still up and running. So when we get new people who want to moderate the forums or you know, set up, write news for the front page, whatever, I set them up with access to the machines, but I don't have anything to do with the day-to-day running of those.
Gotcha. How often do you get confused for an official Bungie site?
I'm sorry, what?
How often are you confused for a official Bungie site?
Daily.
Yeah. I'll admit that when I first...
We are not Bungie Studios. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not even Bungie Studios anymore. Now it's just Bungie. But...
So what's your plan, actually, once Bungie moves on to whatever they're doing next and Microsoft takes over Halo? Are you going to continue to support the Halo community, or are you just going to keep following Bungie?
Both. It depends. I mean, I'll probably move on to whatever the next game is and pass the reins for Halo.Bungie.org to someone who wants to take it over. But we, you know, we supported Myth after Bungie left. Myth 3 had coverage on our Myth site. And in fact, Marathon Infinity wasn't even made by Bungie. It was made by a spinoff company, you know. So we support the games, just not as much as, I mean, we're Bungie first and their creation second. Put it that way. So it'll stay alive as long as there are people interested in keeping it alive. I won't be posting daily news to it, which it may mean it dies. but the forums will stay up, and anybody who wants to continue to follow the games, I mean, I'll certainly still play whatever Halo games come out in the future. I love the universe, and I'm excited to see where 343 is going to take them. But I won't be doing the day-to-day stuff anymore, I don't think.
Hey, Eric, has Microsoft really talked about what's going to happen with the Halo franchise after Bungie? I mean, Bungie's been talking about not wanting to do these games anymore. I mean, is that realistically going to happen?
Realistically, I mean, Bungie is moving on, and Microsoft obviously has a huge cash cow on their hands.
Of course.
They don't want it to die. So they've been slowly, if you've been following the news, they've been slowly building out their own internal studio called 343 Studios.
Okay.
And they've got some, you know, like Frank O'Connor's over there now. He's kind of like their big, like,
he's the fiction
big direction guy. And they've been hiring, and they're working on another Halo game. They haven't announced it, but they're definitely working on it.
A lot of Microsoft's remaining heavy hitters are on 343, like Corinne Yu, who's like one of the biggest tech people at Microsoft. And they hired Ryan Payton to do audio design, and I think he took some people from Kojima's studio, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they definitely have some skill there. The next game is going to have, you know, it might not have the same flavor as a Bungie Halo, but it's going to be a good game.
Are there any Bungie employees that have been siphoned?
Few.
Yeah, okay.
Like Frank O'Connor.
Yeah,
obviously. Yeah.
And Bent Lama. Crud, I'm blanking on his name. An animator with Halo 2 went over there.
Okay.
So and there's a few other. I'm pretty sure there's a handful of them.
So it is something that's definitely happening. It's not like Hideo Kojima keeps saying that he's not going to do Metal Gear anymore, but he keeps making more Metal Gear games.
No. So Microsoft owns Halo.
Mm-hmm.
So Bungie is now independent. Their next project, or I guess their next several projects, are going to be published by Activision.
Hmm.
So they, by definition, cannot be Halo games.
Yeah.
Whole new universe. It's gonna be. I think it's gonna be kind of cool. But it's kind of speaks volumes to the fact that this is so huge that Halo Reach is not even out yet, and we're already talking about what's going to happen after Halo Reach.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, right. Halo is sort of an institution now.
Well, that's one of the reasons that Bungie's so reticent about discussing what's coming next, beyond, you know, that it's a universe that they'll be working in for 10 years, and Activision has publishing rights. They're keeping their mouth shut because they want people to focus on what they're doing right now, which is Reach.
Which, so, by the way, it's a fun game. I got to go
it's
to Bungie
not awful. That's
a few weeks ago, and I played about, say, like 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours of the campaign. It was about 2.5 or 3 levels. And I got to play a bunch of the multiplayer. A lot of fun. I don't want
to
talk.
Looking forward to it.
I don't want to talk too much about the campaign because that would be a lot of spoilers.
Well, I had one question about, I mean, with ODST, or with most of the Halo games, the sort of the split of emphasis is, you know, multiplayer and campaign are sort of half and half, maybe a little bit toward multiplayer. It seemed like with ODST, a lot of the multiplayer stuff was just sort of a rehash of stuff, and so the emphasis then seemed to be on the campaign. I thought the campaign was a lot more compelling than the other ones.
There was no multiplayer for ODST really, except for Firefight, which is, you know, a co-op mode.
And then a few new maps for which later were put out as downloads.
Right, but those were done before the work on the campaign stuff were ever even started. The non-release of those had to do more with internal Microsoft machinations than it did with, you know, getting the stuff done. It was just ODST was a very small team. They put together, you know, what should have been a campaign expansion that grew into this full release, but it wasn't ever meant to be a game by itself. They never planned a new multiplayer component for it.
So would you say that with Reach the balance is again sort of 50-50 or more emphasis on multiplayer?
I would actually say they're trying to meld the two together. Hmm. So they have the whole new armory thing where you can unlock new customization bits for your Spartan, and that carries over between the campaign and the competitive multiplayer.
Interesting.
So almost all of the customization things you do will appear both in the campaign and in the cutscenes even and everything. So they kind of want to turn it into this one big thing that you're doing instead of having it be two totally separate things.
The other part of that to remember is that, you know, as Halo has evolved, so has online gaming. And when Halo first came out, there was no Xbox Live. There was LAN play for multiplayer, but the focus was on campaign. And as time has moved on, you know, we're doing more and more online, and now even there's advantages to playing the campaign online because you get, you know, you get stuff for your armor, you get people can compete on stats, all that fun stuff. So there's more and more tie-in with the online component. So I would agree there's a melding of the two.
And on top of that, they also have these new daily and weekly challenges that they're going to be posting on there into the game. They're actually going to be injecting them straight into the game where they're going to say, like, you know, see if you can beat this level with these skulls turned on without dying.
And those are going to be the death of me.
Oh, yeah. Those are going to drive people crazy. But it's another thing where they're kind of, you know, making the single-player game, what before was a single-player game, is now a four-player co-op game, expanding it to this, you know, it doesn't
more
die
of a community
once
effort, yeah.
It doesn't die once you're done playing and you've experienced the story. It's something to keep going back to.
What I'm kind of curious about is, though, I mean, at what point does Bungie let go of Reach and hand it off to Microsoft? Like, when does it's clear that they're building it like a platform, but at what point does Bungie lose control of the platform and Microsoft takes over, obviously, through 343?
It's going to be interesting.
Good question. They've already talked about, you know, well, they've mentioned a few times in the last couple of weeks that eventually 343 will take over support.
Right.
But nobody's been very specific about that. And my guess is that the first couple of map packs that come out will be Bungie map packs. There will be a team that's, you know, that's building multiplayer stuff, that's keeping track of the playlists, that's building the daily challenges, all of that. And I would guess that's going to go on for at least a year. And then after that, you know, eventually it'll pass over to Microsoft? And the question is the support at that point going to be, you know, identical to what Bungie was supplying, or is it going to be a totally separate sort of maintenance of what's already there but nothing new? Yeah. I don't know the answer to that.
I'm a little bit worried about the changeover just from looking at what happened with Halo Wars, where as soon as the game was finished, Microsoft killed Ensemble and then kind of like hired back the people they just fired when they started a new new studio, Robot, to do support for it. But it was all on a contract basis, so the support was for an RTS was extraordinarily limited.
Right, but I mean, earlier this year we also heard that Ensemble was a total mess for like the last 4 or 5 years, that they never made deadlines, they never made milestones, that their management was in shambles.
I went to the post-mortem at DICE, was that a year and a half ago?
Right.
With Bruce Shelley, and that was probably the most depressing post-mortem I ever listened to. He was just like in tears, basically, talking about how everything went wrong.
Right. And then at GDC this year, there was the three laid-off game developers, one of whom was an Ensemble employee, and just basically tearing apart everyone that worked on that project.
Yeah.
Jeez.
They were originally working, or at one point, were working on a Halo MMO as well, which went nowhere. So you can imagine that was a big money drain,
I'm sort of glad that one didn't come out.
Yeah, I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but man.
You know, there's always this push-pull between developers and publishers, and everybody wants to make money, but beyond that, the focuses are totally different, right? And it's just, it's really hard to sort of believe that, well, all right, so on the good side, 343 is being run by a group of people that actually I know personally, and I really think that they have Halo in their heart, right? That they really think that it's a good game, that it's something worth supporting. It's not just, you know, tomorrow's paycheck. On the other hand, it's not the group that built the game. And are they going to have the same love for it? It's hard to say.
I mean, even at Bungie, though, it's not the same people that built Halo that are running Bungie now. Like, the people that founded Halo or founded Bungie are long gone for the most part.
Well, Jason Jones is still there.
There's still some people from...
Didn't
from
a bunch
back,
of them take off to form Wideload and a few other studios?
A few people have splintered off over the years, yeah. But there still are some original guys who worked on the first Halo who are still there working on Halo Reach.
That's true.
I'm just bummed I didn't get my Stubbs, too.
Stubbs was not a great game, but it had an awesome soundtrack.
I enjoyed the hell out of that game, even if it was short.
It was a great concept. It really was.
So I've already forgotten the numbers. Was it 343?
Yes.
is this team being set up exclusively for Halo, or is this just like a new?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Microsoft's internal Halo team.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to be getting, you know, tons of support. There's not going to be any lack of support. You know, they're actually.
Yeah, but the question is, are they going to focus on a game they didn't build, Reach, or are they going to focus on Halo 4, which they're currently in the process of building? Hmm. You know, where are their resources going to go? Mm-hmm. And that's a question that isn't really going to be answered until Bungie walks away, which isn't going to happen for a while.
I'm sure that point's got to be written into a contract somewhere. That's got to be a definite.
Hopefully. I just hope Microsoft understands that the reason why Halo has become this institution is because Bungie has been so good at supporting the community.
Yeah.
It's not just they made a great game. They made a great game. But then they went beyond what most developers do after making a great game and supported the community for years and years and years. When they were not bringing in, you know, minimal money by supporting them through those years, but they just kept building it. Because once you get into, you know, Bungie.net, you get into the online community, it's really impossible to walk away.
The feature set of Reach seems like they're almost trying to Microsoft-proof future support for Reach, because you have the super robust map editor and much more robust support for player interaction with the game, that it's like, well, you don't even have to worry about Microsoft supporting this game anymore, because you guys will be making your own maps and putting them up in a way that you never could with any other Halo game, and that honestly very few console games have ever tried.
I think that's more of a coincidence than an active plan. I think Reach was built with pretty much, they wanted to put in every single thing that they could, that they'd wanted to put into all the games before it that they hadn't had a chance to. that's just one of the tools they've been wanting to give to the fans. And yeah, sure, it works out that that once you have it, you don't actually need Microsoft to be producing map packs, but you still need somebody to be adding those into online playlists. Otherwise, they're not that useful. You know, I mean, that's one of the big problems with Forge today is that people can create really cool maps, but you can only play them with your friends because they're not in matchmaking.
And that, unfortunately, is not changing with Halo Reach. They are still keeping it kind of closed off, but they are adding a better tagging system, so it's easier to find new maps.
I got the impression from some recent interviews that they were planning on doing a much greater integration of community built maps than previously.
They are, but in terms of like making a map yourself and then finding people to play with you, it's still get people on your friends list or go on some message boards and find some people.
So you're saying like
it's not like I can open up a map and anyone can just matchmake into it.
It has to be chosen to be like integrated into the matchmaking.
Exactly. Gotcha. So, which is kind of cool. There's a better tagging system, like I said, and there's a better voting system now so that it'll be easier for anybody at Bungie or in the future at Microsoft to find the maps that everybody likes to put them into matchmaking. So that at least will hopefully happen faster now than it was in the past.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said that in the Reach VIDOC, the Forge World VIDOC, that made me a little nervous. They said, oh, you know, our new system is going to let the good maps bubble to the top. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's what you said about the old system.
Yeah. It is a better system, but it's still...
Okay. How are they going to bubble if I create a level and it's still sort of limited to me and my friends?
It would still be an underground type thing where people on message boards pass around the link, or you know, you go on Bungie.net and you look through some maps and decide to download them.
Gotcha.
But that's the thing. It's still going to be a matter of, you know, like, you're going to have to promote it. You're going to have to go to the Forging websites and say, here's my new map, check it out. You know, if you just pass it around to your friends are going to be the only ones that ever see it.
Yep.
It'll never get to the point where it comes to the attention of somebody who can add it to a matchmaking list.
Well, and who knows, maybe that's one of the things that the Waypoint team is focusing on, like providing exposure to maps that people are actually interested in, that are getting some traction, that they want people to be able to find these maps in that way, because Waypoint is something we haven't had for a Halo game like this before.
That's true.
What's Waypoint?
Waypoint is the is the Halo portal that Microsoft launched last year that 343 has been running.
Oh, okay.
It tracks all your achievements across every Halo game and gives you awards. It's how they released the Halo Legends episodes on Xbox Live. It's how they're releasing the VIDOCs online.
It's their way of having kind of one app on the Xbox Live dashboard that ties all of Halo together.
Okay.
But I mean, think about it in the way that music works, right? There's a billion bands out there, and some of them are really, really good, and nobody ever hears about them. And some of the bands that make it to superstardom are crap. Why are they in superstardom? Because they promoted themselves well. Whereas, you know, Joe Schmo, who's the best guitar player you've ever heard, can't get out of his local clubs. I think we're going to have the same problem. I think if Bungie had created a system that actually let the best maps make it to the top, they could sell that to every other industry on the planet.
It's true.
So I'm skeptical.
The good news, though, is that the Forge tools are way, way better. Just being able to place an object and float it in the air now without having to fumble with some kind of tricks and breaking the physics as you did in Halo 3 is instantly going to make, one, more people design maps, and two, make all the maps better. You're just going to have people who can focus on actually designing the maps. And so if you actually look at the all the Forge World stuff that they've shown so far, they have maps that they built using Forge tools that are instantly going to be in the rotation to show you, like, hey, this is what's possible if you sit down with Forge. Now, maybe go try it yourself.
How many games with a like build your own level sort of things have you actually in the history of ever built your own levels? Like, you know, spent a lot of time doing it.
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
Not too much.
Yeah, same here.
Well, so the last week and a half, Irk's been posting these articles up on BungieNet. He calls them incompetent cartographer, and he's not a map maker. He's never really used Forge before. but he's been documenting sort of the building of a multiplayer map that he's doing himself using Forge World. And it really looks like, you know, if somebody who's never done this before can turn out a map as good as this one's turning out, then the people who are good at this stuff are going to be turning out incredible stuff.
And you have to expect that it's going to be a pretty small portion of any community that's actually building stuff, but mm-hmm. I think Halo is one of the few games where there are so many people playing that there will be a ton of maps, because there's a percentage of crazy people that will just devote their entire lives to making Halo.
Which is
maps.
Awesome, because you know, you sell 5 or 10 million copies of a game,
right.
Even if you have 0.1% of the population being crazy and working on those maps, everybody gets the benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
All those people who just bought it casually, now they get those awesome maps that those, you know, few thousand crazy people made for you.
I mean, we're seeing that in Halo 3, and the tools are, you know, primitive compared to what you're going to be getting in Reach. So I can't imagine that it's going to be, you know, you're not going to want for any good maps, I think. It's just a matter of, you know, how many of them are actually going to make it into matchmaking. And because most people don't have time to, you know, like, gather up a bunch of good maps and then set up a time for all their friends to be online at the same time so that they can play them some night. I mean, I know groups that have, you know, Friday night customs games or Saturday night customs games, but that's a small percentage of the population. Most people just want to jump into matchmaking and play.
Remember when you had to coordinate with 16 people to organize a LAN match in Halo 1?
I do.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. I did that all through college.
Xboxes and the TVs. And stuff.
Who's got enough TVs? Who's got a big enough apartment?
My apartment was awesome for about about 1.5 years. It was just every Friday night. I worked at a pizza place too, so we would just borrow a bunch of pizzas.
You'd bring them back though.
Yes, we would. We would deposit them.
See, I was in college when Halo 1 came out, and we had the college LAN that we were just plugged all into.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
But it was awesome because we were all in separate dorm rooms, and we all would just be on the phone. So, like, there were no headsets or anything. We'd set up the game, and then, like, midway through the game, you'd, like, call your friend. You suck! No, you suck! Okay, bye.
Everyone keeps their doors open and just yells down the hallway.
Exactly, yeah.
Everyone else in the dorm hates you.
You'd have one guy who wouldn't be playing the game. He would just be sitting there on the phone calling people, telling them they suck.
Is that what Dave did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's what Live was supposed to remove the need for, but it's really not the same.
I still prefer LAN play.
Yeah, I do too, definitely. You know, sitting next to somebody and, you know, they do something really stupid, you can punch them. Can't do that over Live.
There is System Link in Reach still, right?
Yes.
I'm sure there is. It's just...
You say
it's
just, that.
It's so unlikely that you know, we ever get to that point to play games when... I don't know, it just seems like it's so much easier to go home and play online. But then I still think that it's such a vastly inferior.
Right. Well, experience. StarCraft 2 came out last week without LAN play, so I just didn't want to take that off the table.
Oh, no.
They've already said there's LAN play and split screen co-op and all that fun stuff.
Because Bungie likes their players.
They like people to keep playing their games.
Yeah.
Really? StarCraft has no LAN play?
Yeah. StarCraft has no LAN play. Granted, Battle.net is pretty impressive, but yeah, there's no LAN play. In StarCraft 2.
That's just crazy, though, in a game, in an RTS like that. That's, yeah.
It's a PC game. That's
there's
why there's no
for it.
Yeah, it's piracy. Flat out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's an anti-piracy measure. You have to be authenticated in Battle.net to play that game at all.
You can play single player without being
You have to log into Battle.net at some point and save an authentication key on your computer, and eventually that can expire.
This is true. Oh, does it expire?
I think it can, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a pain in the butt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anti-piracy stuff sucks.
Well, pirates suck.
Yeah, well, that's true too, but anti-piracy stuff hurts the real people more than it hurts pirates.
I mean, Halo is actually one of the only console games that really dealt with pirates and hackers in a meaningful way. I mean...
Sure, the banhammer is powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what happened to... Why COD never did anything like that.
It takes resources. You got to have people dedicated to that.
I mean, people find glitches and ways to hack in Modern Warfare 2. It's just at this point, it's such the Wild West that no one expects it to ever change.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of crazy how the whole console, PC, they were kind of converging for a long time, and now they've gone on these like vastly different directions over the past couple of years.
Right.
where the PC is like all hardcore stuff right now. At least that's what's selling. It's either hardcore or indie stuff. And then there's ridiculous anti-piracy measures. I'm wondering if like the consoles will start following down that path. Wondering if once the next Bungie game comes out by Activision, we're going to have like a enter this code to play online crap
kind of
like EA is doing.
People freaked out when Final Fight came out on PSN a few months ago and you had to be logged into PSN all the time to play it. And if you try to play an Xbox Live Arcade game on a console other than the one you bought it on, you need to be signed in Xbox Live online to play it. So we're getting there.
You only need to be... Well, that's true, yes. But you can play it on the console that you bought it on a different gamer tag.
Right.
Right.
Offline.
It's more of a, well, I don't know.
I think we run into these problems more than most people because we, in our office, switch around different Xboxes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Most people just have an Xbox and that's it.
Right. And then we only have to deal with it when it red rings or something.
I think, when the Shivering Isles released for Oblivion, there was a big stink because you had to be signed in Alive to play it.
Yeah.
And if you weren't signed in Alive and you tried to start your game, it would just dump you somewhere without any of your gear.
Oh, it would like load the game, but it would have like placeholder. I actually saw this. It was crazy. They were like placeholder textures saying like content not loaded or something.
Right. Yeah.
It looked really weird.
That's elegant.
Yeah. Most stuff about Oblivion was elegant.
I don't understand that at all. Who are they stopping from doing anything illegal?
I mean, when the 360 first launched, it was the Wild West. People figured out, oh, well, if I just use this profile to download it onto this 360, anybody can play it always. And that changed in like 2 months after every blog on the planet talked about, oh, here's how to get free Xbox Live Arcade games. And then with a PS3, like the first thing that happened was a friend of mine said, okay, well, you need to sign into your PS3 with this account and download all these games that I own and then install them and then I'll change my password again. And now you can't do that anymore.
Except permanently.
Right. So it's... I think that we're approaching the point where console manufacturers are definitely looking at anti-piracy, and there's definitely 360 piracy. It's just not as widespread.
Mm-hmm.
All this anti-piracy stuff is just going to drive me back to arcades.
The arcades are going to make a comeback.
I cannot see that happening.
Did you see the Halo 2600? That
I saw the cartridge. I didn't see what the game looked like at all.
You can play it online.
Craig Harris.
You can play it online?
Yeah.
Wait, through what?
There's like a Flash version of it.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like you plug it into an Atari and play online.
No, no. Yeah, it's on Xbox Live.
You set it next to a phone and it connects to the internet?
So the site that you play it on actually is running an Atari 2600 emulator behind the scenes.
Huh.
So the Flash game interacts with that emulator.
Wow.
So you can't actually, because I tried to download it so that we could host a copy of it, and without the emulator, it doesn't work.
Yeah, Craig Harris.
Craig Harris, yeah. We have a copy of that in the office now.
And an Atari upstairs. So.
Yeah, we do.
Yep.
Have you played it?
I played the Flash version. I haven't played the actual cartridge.
Yeah.
The legit 2600 release of Halo.
Yeah, well, it was cool reading about that because it was Ed Fries did that, who was way back at Microsoft. And he, when he was doing it, he said he wanted to stay within the constraints of the 2600, which is like 4K of space. And so he originally he had a Warthog that was working and was like, oh, I have to cut it for space limitations.
I only had 2 more K.
For no real reason. He wasn't actually limited by that.
No.
He just wanted to be legit. Well, wow.
But then once they had it built, then they could just print cartridges.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. That was pretty cool.
That's a little surprising that he's so into that given his sort of speckled history after he left. But I guess he was one of the people that helped shepherd Halo into existence. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually had to do a little research somebody else pointed out how easy it was to figure out that it was the real Ed Fries, but I was like, it can't be the real Ed Fries. He would be doing this, but it is.
Yeah. What else is he doing right now?
I don't know.
He works for some startup software company.
Making old Atari 2600.
I just want to know if we're going to get, what's the ET Brute Force 2600?
Oh, boy.
Man. I wouldn't play that.
That game sucked. So, Mark Ryan, even before I worked at IGN, I used to go online with you and some of the other IGN guys and play Halo 2.
Mm-hmm.
You have not really played Halo pretty much since Halo 2 online, like with the same intensity.
No.
Are you going to get back into it for Halo Reach?
You know, I'd love to. I don't know. I had so much fun with the first Halo. And then even with Halo 2, I was really enjoying it for probably about, 2 months or so, until I just sort of decided that I didn't like the balancing. I didn't like that. I thought the vehicles were overpowered, and I really missed being able to stun people with the plasma weapons and then smack them in the back. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of, I'm holding out in protest. So if they change those things, maybe. I mean, I think that I'm not a big online player and stuff, but I thought that, Halo 2 was by far the best online experience, at the time, and I still think that it still beats most online games.
It does, actually.
So you never played Halo 3 much online?
Not too much. I mean, I played it a little bit. We'd get it in the office, and I think I was helping out Andre Seegers, who was writing the guide at the time, figuring out some stuff in the multiplayer. And so we played it and enjoyed it. But, it was never something that I brought home with me.
Did you play the beta for Halo Reach?
I played it, again, once in the office. We were all playing together. And that was really cool. It was sort of like we went online, we were playing. But, it was me, Sam Claiborne, and Brian Miggles, and were you playing? I can't remember. Someone else was playing. It was almost like a LAN experience, and it was kind
of
fun.
The day we got our codes, and it was like, holy shit, everyone download this right now.
Yeah, it was fun.
I actually, that weekend, I had to go to a wedding in Florida, mm-hmm. and we got the codes, 2 days before it actually...
The Thursday before it launched.
So I had to go to a wedding, and I actually brought a 360, and with the hopes of, I'm going to find a place to plug this in.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. We even went down to the hotel reception. We were like, can we rent a meeting room? And they're like, yes. They're like, will it have internet access and a TV? And they were like, I don't know if we can supply both of those.
Like, all right. You get either one.
Yeah.
You can either have a TV or internet.
They were like, there's a TV over there. And we're like,
what are they, your parents?
Well, a lot of hotels, you can rent a meeting room and get those things.
Right.
Yeah. They wouldn't do it for us, though. It's a hotel on the beach in Florida.
That's dedication, wanting to play during the wedding.
Do you think that excitement is going to carry through once the final game's out for a month or so? You think you're going to get back into it? Because I know you were a huge Halo 1 player.
I was huge, and I played Halo 2 a ton too, and I played Halo 3 a lot. Mm-hmm. The problem, though, with me, at least for Halo games, is they always come out in the fall, and that's the busiest time of the year for us at this job. And I'll play the Halo game, I'm like, yes, this is awesome, and then a week later, I'm like, now I have to review this next game, so... Mm-hmm. That's what I have to focus on.
And then by the end of the review season, everyone else has been playing the game for 3 months and they're awesome at it.
Yeah. Or they don't want to play anymore. And I'm hopping online and people have moved on to something else. Yeah. It kind of sucks. I'm hoping that I can carve out a lot of time to play this one because it's a lot of fun, at least from what I've played so far.
I really like the ability that lets you run because it lets me smash people in the face.
That's been toned down in the final game. I apologize.
I hate it when they do that.
Because of that reason or what?
Yeah, because it was too easy to pound people in the face.
It can never be too easy to pound people in the face.
But the cool part about Halo Reach is that they're leaving almost everything up for you to edit. So on your own custom games, you can do everything. You can turn jetpacks on so that you have all the time jetpacks. They don't run out and recharge.
Interesting.
So you can do all kinds of crazy stuff if you just want to go in and tweak your own settings.
You just make Halo tribes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. And so will those rules, that's part of Forge, I'm guessing?
It's kind of with their whole, you can do it for any sort of game, just adjust the settings. Okay.
I wonder, because it'd be kind of cool if you can make a level in Forge and then attach those settings to it. Oh, you can?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's one thing that's going to be really nice. You can actually download, so somebody can create some, really bizarre combination of game type and map, and you download it as a unit. You don't have to, go look for the rules anywhere.
Okay, that's cool.
They're actually built into it.
Yeah, it seems like it would totally make sense to have an alternate matchmaking where you can just go through user stuff and there's no, maybe at the end of it there's a vote. You just say,
"Was this
like this or I didn't like this," and it could be that simple. And it'd be,
if you could just hit a button I want to try a random map.
Yeah,
it's annoying.
You'd get
crap
99% of the
for
time.
For sure, for sure.
Xbox Live this generation was supposed to do that. They swore up and down that you'd be able to do that kind of stuff before the 360 came out, which is why you set your match-making preferences to underground or pro or casual, but nothing pays attention to that shit.
Yeah. What are you in? What's your
I think I'm just, I'm pro or casual, because I like the idea of playing with a bunch of underground kids makes me want to crush someone's skull in my hands. Like, just like they promised that people would be watching, thousands of people would be watching Project Gotham 3 races. So I guess that's not the biggest promise that didn't get kept.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, first you'd have to find thousands of people that would want to watch a PGR 3 race.
When it came out, man, that was the golden opportunity.
Why would you ever want to watch it when you could just play it?
I don't know.
See, like, people watch NASCAR because they can't drive 200 miles an hour.
Yeah. And because they like going to it and eating hot dogs and drinking beer.
Yes. So well, yes, there's that too.
I wonder at what point we're going to get an upgrade to Xbox Live to make that possible. Now that they're not supporting version 1.
Well, you know, they baked some of those things into Halo Reach. So like you can go in and say, I prefer to be put into matches where people don't talk. But of course you're
going to... But they still, you know, the Xbox Live part that says, I prefer this player or I'm avoiding this player, those are totally ignored.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, before you start worrying about, you know, getting people to watch your games or to be able to download maps, I want to just be able to block the people I hate playing with.
Right.
That's like step one.
I wonder if this is going to be another Halo game where they let it break cert in all sorts of ways, how turning on custom soundtracks will basically break the game and shit like that.
Well, that's just Marty not wanting you to override his music with...
I fully support that.
His music's just awesome.
Right.
The Flintstones theme song. Flintstones Vitamins. Love that song.
He's not wanting you to play that, but no, I mean, there's something to be said for, you know, the audio part of the game is actually pretty important.
Right, and it's not something that I would typically want to do, but there are definitely things that they let Bungie get away with the 360 that no other team would pass cert with.
But if you go back in the Halo games, like the silent cartographer in the original Halo game, if you had a custom soundtrack on during that level, it would be probably like 30% less fun.
Right.
Just when that music starts kicking in and everything, that actually made the game more fun.
Unless you're listening to like 311 or something, that could be really cool. Yeah,
something awesome.
Then that'd be really amped.
Yeah, featured on Halo Reach soundtrack, inspired by.
Yeah, I mean, that music was awesome in that level. That was like, I remember playing that, and I was like, this is like the beginning, you know, before. It was really easy to get MP3s of video game music on the internet, and so I was just searching all over the place to find that.
Will there be party chat in ranked matches?
Oh, I don't know.
That's a good question.
That is a good question.
Why is there not in the...
No, it was Modern Warfare 2 was the first game last year that disabled party chat in almost every playlist.
For a reason?
Every ranked one. You can go into
They said
like
it was
casual.
To avoid cheating.
Which is so obnoxious, because every time I played any of the Call of Duty games, I always set up a private chat with whoever I was playing with, because the people on there are so obnoxious. They're so awful. I cannot stand listening to them.
And I'm not saying that Halo's any better. I'm saying it's not. I don't really like to do party chat with my friends.
I want to be with them. What I don't understand are the people that go into playlists by themselves and they're in chat. It's like, who are they in chat with? And how can you focus on a conversation and a game that the other person's not even playing in at the same time?
Because they're not focusing. They're just dicking around while talking to a friend.
Yeah.
How dare they?
In a ranked playlist.
Guilty.
Because they're drunk.
Right. That's why we lost. Yeah,
the other person actually thinks they're playing, but they're not.
Totally different games.
Yeah.
I do not drink and play games that often, but the last time I did was with ODST, actually, and I was playing with Ryan Clements and Dave Clayman and a few other people, and I wanted to get the achievement, Play Like Marty, where you don't kill anyone, you don't kill anything, you just hide in a corner.
So you're playing multiplayer.
So I was playing Firefight, in ODST, and I got the achievement. And the whole time, everyone's like yelling, like, where's Eric? What's he doing? And I was like, I'm coming to help, guys. And then I just started laughing. I was like, I got the achievement. And then nobody would play Firefight with me after that. That, like, killed it.
How long did you have to do that? The achievement?
I got the achievement.
You did, but I mean, that wasn't... Well, you didn't tell him at the you said, I'm coming.
Yeah, yeah. I totally lied to him the whole time. And then got the achievement and started laughing and told them, and then they all quit.
Is it for the entirety of a match?
It's for a whole wave. Oh. Or a round, yeah.
Jesus.
It takes a while.
Jerk.
Yeah.
You're
They made the achievement. I don't think they're going to have achievements like that anymore.
You're what's ruining games, not achievements. Do you think
Marty actually plays like that?
I don't know.
No.
I'd like to play a game with him. Shoot him in the face.
Does he play?
He played in Halo 1. I haven't seen him much since then. I might have played a couple of games with him in Halo 2. I think he doesn't have time. Plus, he's getting old.
Well, it seems like Marty has taken on a much larger role than just composer at Bungie.
He's the entire sound director, yeah. So he's doing...
Not just that, but like he did like script writing duty for at least part of Halo 3, I think.
Yeah, I think he's sort of directing the tone of the games.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah, that was actually going to be one of my questions, too, is if he was... I didn't know if he was part of Bungie or if he was just, like, contracted by Bungie. But I guess it sounds like he's definitely...
He got hired back in 2000 to work on... Well, he was hired contract work to do the Myth soundtrack in 1997 or 8 or something. And then they hired him back as a... Like, to work on Halo in 2000, and he's been with them ever since, and never left again.
Okay.
Yeah, we hired him to write music for the Cortana letters.
That would have been really cool.
Arthur, you're working on a feature right
now. I am working on a feature right now for Halo, based on the way that this story has been explored outside of the games, which is sort of unique to Halo. So, Cortana letters, among other things, are going to be explored.
Interesting, because that's the one piece of fiction that's sort of left out in the cold most of the time.
Right, well, I think they've gone on record in certain interviews as saying the only parts of it that are considered hard canon are the things that Cortana quotes from it in the Halo 3 teaser trailer or whatever.
Well, you know the story of that, I assume.
Right, yeah, it's a long and storied thing that I think most non-Halo fans may or may not care about, but it was definitely...
Fair enough, all right.
It was a pretty interesting... experiment on exposing a game before it came out. It was way ahead of its time as far as just teasing people with the idea of a game long before anyone knew what it was.
But sort the Bungie employee who did the teasing ended up melting down. And
oh, did he?
Yeah.
Was that before or after they figured who he was?
That was not approved.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was on the... was he on you guys' forums? The Marathon forums? Like, revealing some of that shit?
Yeah, well, he actually did some of it on the HBO forums, but most of it he did on this site called Island 4. It was a fan site specifically set up for his concept of, oh man, I can't even remember what Island 4 is now, but it has to do with self-enclosed space colonies, space communities. This was a concept that came from the 60s or 70s, and there was Islands 1, 2, 3, and 4 was the most complicated. Anyway.
So there are a lot of weird guys about? That work at Bungie, like a lot of crazy people that work at Bungie.
I think that, you know, they get a lot of really bright people, and bright people tend to have weird ideas sometimes. They're often allowed to run with them.
Has there been an ARG or viral campaign for Reach? Because I haven't caught wind of anything.
There has not been one yet.
Like the Bungie Aerospace thing sort of...
For one.
The Aerospace thing sort of popped up a while back, but that didn't really go anywhere yet. And they'd sort of slacked on Halo 3, too. Like, because Project Iris didn't come out until a couple months before the game did.
Yeah, that was not as well managed as it could have been.
Right.
But it was still an interesting campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, Isle of Bees is still held up as a sort of a seminal ARG, which is interesting because it wasn't even close to the first one. So the whole idea of, you know, going outside the game, I don't know. It's a really neat concept, but it turns out that it doesn't actually get anybody but the really hardcore fans interested.
Well, but then the hardcore fans do all the work and generate interest in other communities because they just want to read about this crazy thing that's happening. Just like, no one wants to play EVE Online, but everybody wants to hear about the crazy shit that happens in EVE Online all the time.
Well, I still think video games are sold first to the hardcore, who then sell it to the casual players.
Right, they're the word of mouth.
You have to have the word of mouth with video games. So if you don't support the hardcore community, you're never going to, in the long run, support a franchise.
The fan community, that's something that somebody mentioned early on, is that's something Bungie does right. And my question is, it's 10 years later in terms of, you know, sort of online games and fan communities and all that stuff, and there's still nobody else, well, Blizzard maybe, there's very few other gaming companies that are actually actively supporting their fan base. And why?
Well, it's actually...
It clearly pays.
It's kind of interesting, though, because if you're an executive at some company and somebody, and you have someone below you comes up and says, we want to do this big fan support thing, you can't point to any real money coming back from that.
Right.
There's no way you can say, when I do this, we will make this much money. Well, on the flip side, when you say, well, you know, if we do this marketing campaign, we can show you this uptick in sales afterwards. Right. So they'll go with the marketing campaign every time.
I mean, when Bungie started, it was at a point where no one was really sure what would work, where we were coming into an era where the internet was just becoming important for console games. I mean, for PC and Mac games, it was a different story. Like, they were distributed online in a lot of cases, but that was never the case with console games until the late in the PS2 and Xbox's life. It's only after a few years of that they start to realize what works and what doesn't. And I Love Bees is sort of the last example of something that they were like, well, we don't know what the return on investment of this is going to be, but screw it. It's awesome. So let's run with it.
Let's try it.
And now,
I mean, if you look at us, you know, HBO has been around since 1999, Bungie.org a little longer than that. And I've heard stories from Bungie folks where Microsoft wanted us shut down more than once.
Yeah, because
that doesn't surprise me.
The wrong name.
Microsoft is very about controlling the message.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Bungie said, no, you can't do that. And they're totally right. I mean, you can't point to the dollar amount that we have generated for Halo or for any Bungie game, but you can certainly say that they've gotten their money's worth.
Right, and I'm sure that there are people in the gaming side of Microsoft that would absolutely agree with you. And there are still people at Microsoft Corporate that think that you're a threat.
Right.
Yeah, there's definitely still people. I mean, every person who's not kind of involved in the community itself, it's impossible to see the worth of a community if you're not a part of it.
Right. And I mean, you have games that, like you said, aren't doing any of this that are still massively successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like
right.
Modern Warfare 2 is like, it doesn't seem like Activision or the people that they have running the Modern Warfare 2 stuff now, because it's sure shit not the main people at Infinity Ward. It doesn't seem like they care, because they're charging $15 for a map pack that's like only a little bit of new content, but people still buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So where they don't see that there's a need for that kind of human investment.
Right. And that's the problem is it doesn't seem to affect the really big games like that, although it may down the road. You know, if you don't build customer loyalty at the start, you don't have it 5 years from now, unless you keep putting new stuff out. You become sort of, you know, what have you done for me lately? Right?
What do you guys think will be more relevant, say, in another, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, Halo or Call of Duty? I mean, because they're handled completely differently as far as, you know, support.
That's an interesting question.
If Microsoft handles it intelligently, Halo will be. Because
if we assume that Halo went along the same, you know, as well as it's gone under Bungie's stewardship.
Halo would be, because Microsoft doesn't seem determined to just ram it into the ground the way that
the Call of Duty franchise is
determined.
Well, that's
to.
The other part of it is 5 years from now, you can be positive that none of the people who worked on the games that made the franchises popular will still be around.
Mm-hmm. It's possible.
They're already gone, right? Infinity Ward is gone. Mm-hmm. Bungie's going to be gone next year.
I do think that ODST set a disturbing precedent. As much as I really enjoyed ODST, that was a situation where a certain number of suits said, look, this doesn't need to be a downloadable expansion. First of all, it won't sell as much as a downloadable expansion, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, Grand Theft Auto 4 demonstrated that DLC is not ripe yet for that kind of thing.
Oh, man. Just as a side note, I was talking yesterday with Hillary, our editor-in-chief, about that, about how disappointing it is that Rockstar made these awesome giant expansions,
right,
and they sold so poorly that everybody's going to point to them and say, well, if Rockstar can't do it, then why should we try?
I mean, there are a lot of extenuating circumstances behind why it didn't. Possibly the audience of Grand Theft Auto was much more casual than a lot of other games, and they also took forever to release it.
Mm-hmm. But if you want to do a giant expansion like that.
Why didn't they come back for the DLC?
Right. With ODST, I mean, selling it at retail was a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
But someone at some bean counter level said, look, we could sell this at $40 and we would sell like 5 or 4.5 million copies. Or we could sell it at $60 and sell 3 million copies and make more money.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. And they sold more than 3 million copies of ODST, which is just an expansion with multiplayer tacked on.
I don't think they would have sold 4.5 million. I don't think they would have sold more had it been a downloadable expansion.
Well, I mean, as a cheaper retail title, like a $40 retail.
I think if they had sold it as DLC, it would have sold at a cheaper price point and fewer copies.
Right.
It would have made a lot less money.
Yeah. And yeah, so I mean, it totally makes sense that it sold at retail, but someone at a more cynical level decided that we should sell this at 60.
You're right about that.
Because those assholes will pay it, and we certainly did.
Well, I mean, I think Bungie did a decent job of, after being told it was going to be sold as a full retail copy, did a decent job of filling it out to the point where you really didn't, unless you didn't give a damn about the franchise itself, you didn't feel ripped off. Because, you know, I still use the ODST multiplayer disc when I play Halo 3 because all the maps are on it.
Yep.
And you got access to the Reach beta, which was pretty cool.
Right.
I really liked the experimental nature of the campaign, too.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. I thought that was kind of, you know, Halo 2 campaign I really didn't like, and then 3 was kind of getting better, and then
was
I really...
Was it the Jackal snipers in Halo 2 that did it?
It was, actually.
Yeah.
Playing on Legendary with those...
It was
God,
impossible.
It, yeah.
See, I didn't even worry about that. I never got past Cairo Station on Legendary. I couldn't get through that docking bay.
Yeah, I mean,
just too many elites, and I wasn't good enough with the noob combo.
Yeah, I thought that the ODST, the product that came out, if I had never heard that it was supposed to be a downloadable expansion instead, I would have never thought, oh, well, this is not worth $60.
Right, it was a spectacular failure at messaging from start to finish.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Well, it was mixed messages. You know, it was. They didn't make the decision to sell it until they'd already started talking about it. Which
well, part
is
of that
one
is
one of the reasons that Bungie tries not to talk about anything.
Right. Part of that is Bungie's fault because Bungie wasn't sure what they wanted to be when they were making it.
Well, I think they were sure, and then Microsoft changed their mind.
They wanted it to be an expansion.
Well, but they were saying small expansion, then it was getting bigger and bigger as far as how expansive it was as an expansion.
I'm pretty sure that the bigger and bigger part came after they had to justify a $60 price point. I think that they were shooting for a 3 to 4 hour expansion pack. That's what they had sort of budgeted manpower for, budgeted time for, and then Microsoft said, "No, you got to release this full game." And now they said, "Well, how are we going to do that without pissing off our fans?"
Mm-hmm. So, if we assume that's true, are you glad that it became a full retail game rather than a DLC?
Personally, I don't care one way or another.
I didn't feel like I was ripped off. I felt there was a lot of bad blood. There was a lot of bad feelings towards Bungie unnecessarily because it was a $60 game.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked to have avoided that because I think it's kind of unnecessary.
I think it's interesting because...
it's my favorite campaign as well. For the longest time, my favorite campaign was the first one, but then ODST came along and I liked it even better.
Mm-hmm. It's the first one that feels oriented around telling a story as opposed to taking you through levels,
right?
At least since Combat Evolved.
Plus they really made an effort to sort of, so hunters were really scary when we first saw them in Halo 1, until we figured out you could kill them with one shot.
Yeah.
Then they weren't scary at all. So they made them really big in Halo 2, and it took a lot of bullets, but, you know, they were big and dumb. So in Halo 3, they made them big and kind of not so dumb. And now they're just work to kill. So it was finally... ODST was the first one where it went back to this big, scary, you know... And it's more than work. You actually have to think about it, because they can follow you, and they'll flank you. You know, it was all sorts of... It seems like they did it right.
I also like playing as an ODST and not being this super soldier added to the atmosphere.
Right.
Where you're walking down these dark hall, like dark corridors, the city's falling apart, and you can't rely on, you know, regenerative health.
I mean, is in terms of gameplay, actual gameplay changes, it wasn't that significant. But I agree that, like, just the idea of I'm not playing as Superman, because Superman's a boring character. And honestly, I think Master Chief is not the most interesting character to play as. To play as a more vulnerable person, I think, is a lot more interesting.
Well, he wasn't that normal. So,
No.
He wasn't just a normal dude.
In terms of gameplay, it wasn't really that different.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well,
it's just the presentation.
I think that's a big part of it, sort of, you know, not being invulnerable. Although I know plenty of people who like to run through campaigns on easy just because it's fun to kill stuff.
Right.
You know, you don't have to worry about getting hurt. I don't know.
And that's, they're sort of treading a similar line to ODST and Reach, right, that you're more vulnerable than a Spartan 2 because
right. You're
Spartan 3.
You're a Spartan 3 instead of a Spartan 2, and you're...
You're still a bit of a badass. I mean, you have jetpacks.
Right. And you, there is at least one Spartan 2 with you.
So, right. So I haven't been following, you know, information about the campaign for Reach at all. Are you, you're not playing as Master Chief?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Okay, and what's
Master
the... What's,
not even in the game, except as a firefight voice.
Interesting. And then, so what's the difference between a Spartan...
Spartan 3s were the cheaper, more disposable
versions of
mass-produced alternative, yeah. Mm. They had a much higher casualty rate.
But there are more of them, which is why the whole Reach battle is cool, because there's tons of Spartans against tons of elites.
Gotcha. So you're going to be fighting alongside...
Other Spartans, yeah.
Okay.
Although, is it tons of Spartan 2s or Spartan 3s?
Tons
like,
of Spartan
3s. How much are they retconning here? I'm a little curious. They're releasing The Fall of Reach again, the book.
Yeah.
Like the week before, I think, Reach.
That was just announced yesterday, yep.
Yeah, they confirmed it. Yeah. And they're having Eric Nyland rewrite it, I think.
No. There were just some errors fixed. No real content changes.
No.
They've added stuff like, you know, O&I interview transcripts and sketches of cover art and stuff like that. But there's no, the story itself is not being changed in any significant way.
They've really used that alternate fiction as a way to tap dance around some serious continuity issues in that game, like the Sarge being alive at all, for example. They totally retconned his origin just to make it so that he's still around.
Yeah, but he's awesome, well, so like,
I mean,
it's
there
okay.
were plenty of tricksters in Halo 1 that showed that you could get two or three Sarges with you.
Right.
You know, in a particular segment.
Right. Well, that's a bug. I mean, like,
I loved all the little glitches in the first Halo. Man, it was so much fun doing those things where, like, you could get back on the Pelican drops and go off.
Right.
Rewriting the Halo story to basically say, oh, well, Sarge is actually pretty much a Spartan 1, which is why he didn't get infected and why he's still alive and he can take all that punishment. It's like, okay.
Right. Well, Bungie. You know, when you start something and you're not really planning for a 10-year expansion of the universe, you make some statements that later on are going to bite you.
Right.
So they're doing their best.
Just waiting for young Anakin to show up and just fuck everything
up. But, you know, they pick Reach, which is the center of UNSC technology, so they could put all sorts of stuff in there that never made it into any other game and say, oh, well, you know, this is all experimental, and the planet gets glassed at the end of the game anyway, so all that stuff is lost.
I'm a little sad that Reach is the final Bungie game, only because it seemed like Reach would have been a much better setting for Halo Wars than what Halo Wars have actually got.
Halo Wars was cool because it's the introduction, you know?
Right.
I don't know, I really liked Halo Wars. Not
Halo
the
Wars
campaign...
was cool. They just made it inconsequential by making it a self-contained story that ends in such a way that no one knows anything happened.
I know.
Right.
That was what I kept... I mean, in all the lead-up to Halo Wars coming out, I was like... How is this possible?
Yeah,
are you going to have the Flood in this game and not ruin what you've already said about Halo
right.
1?
It's kind of a sad statement that you can miss Halo Wars and not miss anything about the Halo story, but if you don't read one of the books, you could be totally lost by something that happens.
Mm. Well, I got the feeling from Halo Wars that the story for it was written more generically. It wasn't even really Halo-related. Like, it got put together sort of as a Halo story after the fact.
It could very well be.
I like those cuts.
I don't have any inside information on it. I'm just going by how it...
Yeah,
it just seems like a generic story that somebody, you know, tacked Halo names into.
Well, they have the Dr. Science girl. They've got the gruff sergeant.
The British
know?
AI.
Yep. Everything about that seems original, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I don't know. And you're right, it was totally self-enclosed, so they could add anything they wanted in there, knowing that, you know, they never had to justify it.
I mean, there was some fan service, obviously. It's like, oh, Dyson Spheres, remember Ghosts of Onyx in Halo 3?
Right.
But yeah, it was a little disappointing.
Yeah, the campaign was okay. I liked the cutscenes. I really enjoyed the multiplayer, though.
Was
playing
it
that online was a lot of fun.
Blur that did the cutscenes for that, I think?
I'm not sure. It looked like it.
Blur
it was really quality stuff.
Really nicely done.
Mm-mm.
But they didn't really fit the... I don't know.
Whatever. It had somebody beating the crap out of an elite at some
that
point.
That was really cool.
That part was pretty awesome. So I'll take it.
We are over an hour here now, so we're going to have to start wrapping things up.
Yeah, GarageBand is going to crash in about 3 minutes.
It's true.
Awesome.
So, any final thoughts, Mark Ryan?
No, I have no thoughts at all.
Awesome. Arthur.
I'll tell you the same thing I told Hillary when he asked me about Reach, is that I like that it's a game that's going to end in tragedy, no matter what happens. Like, it's just how much tragedy.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you think your character is going to live at the end? Do you think he's going to escape?
I think you have to die, don't you? I mean, haven't they sort of spoiled that a little bit?
They got spaceships now. He could get out.
Man.
I don't know. I think there's certainly ambiguous endings possible.
Mm-hmm. If they really wanted to make that shit hit home, they would have you die to save someone else. That's what I think needs to happen in Reach.
But could work.
Save Dom.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, Marie is there.
Oh, God. Claude, any last thoughts?
No, I'm looking forward to the game. I'm looking forward to your continued coverage of it.
6 weeks, right?
I'm looking forward to reading Arthur's article when it comes out.
We have 6 weeks till release?
Yes.
About that, yeah.
September 14th. Awesome.
So, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. This was a lot of fun. We'll have to do this again when Halo 4 comes out.
Sounds like a plan.
All right,
Halo marathon.
Thanks. We will be back next time with more Three Red Lights. Send us some emails, threeredlights@ign.com, all one word, no numbers in there, and maybe we'll do reader mail next week.
Do we want them to rate us and stuff on iTunes?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jennifer, a co-founder of the Go Kid Go Network. At Go Kid Go, putting kids first is at the heart of every show that we produce. That's why we're so excited to introduce a brand new show to our network called The Search for the Silver Lining, a fantasy adventure series about a spirited young girl named Isla who time travels to the mythical land of Camelot. During her journey, Isla meets new friends, including King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table, and learns valuable life lessons with every quest, sword fight, and dragon ride. Positive and uplifting stories remind us all about the importance of kindness, friendship, honesty, and positivity. Join me and an all-star cast of actors, including Liam Neeson, Emily Blunt, Kristen Bell, Chris Hemsworth, among many others, in welcoming the Search for the Silver Lining podcast to the Go Kid Go Network by listening today. Look for the Search for the Silver Lining on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.